So our hope today is just to kind of open up your eyes and look at these different perspectives and see what the courts are saying about these throughout the nation. So the first area we're going to touch on, before I turn it over to Ethan, is about calculating the current monthly income and the ACP and whether or not gross business income should be used to calculate the CMI or should it be a net calculation on the 122C1 form. I have my own view, Ethan has his, and that's where we're going to pick up from here. So, Ethan?
Okay, folks. As we go through the presentation, I think you guys will realize that I tend to see things mostly through a Chapter 13 lens, since that's what I do every day. But a lot of these issues are going to be equally important when you're Chapter 7 practice. And if we can just go ahead and flip to this next slide. I think we're all going to find that the starting point for everything under the means test is the calculation of the current monthly income. That's step one. Once you get your current monthly income and you compare that to the median income for the debtor's household size, then you'll be able to move on to step two, which is your determination of whether or not the debtor has disposable income, at least in Chapter 13, or maybe whether there's abuse and whether or not they qualify for 7. Of course, if they're above, can we hit the next one?
And by the way, you can see Ethan giving me orders. Change the slide here. This is the only time I will respect those orders. It's not coming from an appellate court. So I will oblige you here.
Well, I'm trying to cruise through the intro fairly quick. Of course, okay. If you're above median, 1325B3 will deduct, send you to 707 to calculate disposable income. And then, of course, all Chapter 13 debtors are required to complete their Form 122C and adhere to the official form. The means test, of course, guards the door to Chapter 7, determines how much might be paid under Chapter 13, and it also determines the applicable commitment period. Now,
can I just say that, you know, passing or failing the means test is a misnomer. You really don't actually pass or fail the means test. I mean, you can still pass the means test and fail it later on Form 2, or fail it at the beginning and then pass it later on. So that's a bit of a misnomer. We're going to get a little bit into that today.
So let's dive into our first big controversy.
Who said it was a controversy?
You did.
I did. Then. Okay.
So first off, we've got to start with the definition of current monthly income. So current monthly income includes pretty much all the income the debtor received, paid by any entity. And we're talking about during that look-back period. Every conceivable source, whether taxable or not, is included in current monthly income. There are some exclusions, of course. You're going to be able to exclude your Social Security benefits, relief payments for COVID-19, terrorism, war crimes, and we've recently added the VA disability exclusion as well.
So what's the controversy with this?
Well, there's not any in my mind.
Okay.
Once we calculate the current monthly income, which is a gross figure, we'll go and we'll reduce that by the debtor's reasonably necessary expenses when we're calculating disposable income.
So, Ethan, this is essentially a battle of the code versus forms, right? Can I summarize it something like that?
Yeah. What I'm saying is, so we've got a definition of current monthly income, which is a calculation of gross income. And once you calculate your current monthly income, you can then move on to calculate your disposable income, which is essentially just current monthly income with the exclusions for COVID-19, child support, foster care, disability payments, and reasonable expenses for the support of the debtor and the debtor's dependents. Charitable contributions, of course, and then also
less
necessary
business expenses. Right.
And that's where it all, so without, you don't take into account under the code necessary business expenses until you're calculating disposable income.
And so look, this is what we're looking at here, right?
Well, that's what Form 122C1 says, right?
This is what the form says. All right, you take your gross income, you deduct your ordinary business expenses, and you get your net income, and you calculate your CMI. So where's the controversy?
Well, the form's clearly wrong.
Didn't I say that earlier? Okay, somebody said that. I didn't say that. All right, so you're telling the audience here today that in order to calculate a CMI for a business debtor is different from that of an individual.
No, I'm actually not saying that. I think individuals include their gross as well in all of their reimbursed expenses.
Okay, fair. So when you get to this step here, if a business debtor, let's say a truck driver, right? Mm-hmm. Makes $5,000 a month, mm-hmm. has $4,500 or $4,000 in monthly operating expenses. Got tires, fuel, labor, what have you. You want him to declare here he's got $5,000 worth of net income. Because, and what's the difference here of doing it that way versus the marital adjustment found in section 5, or is it 15, of form 1, where a non-filing spouse does not have to declare the income that she's not contributing to the household. So if a business debtor is not contributing...